Columbia. Columbia Pictures Corporation presents a Charles H. Schnee production. Jason and the Argonauts. Starring Todd Armstrong as Jason and Nancy Kuvach as Medea. Co-starring Gary Raymond and Lawrence Naismith. With Niall McGuinness, Michael Gwynn, Douglas Wilmer, Jack Gwillem, Honor Blackman, John Kearney, Patrick Troughton, Andrew Folds, Nigel Green. Associate producer Ray Harryhausen, creator of special visual effects. Music by Bernard Herrmann, conducting the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. Screenplay by Jan Reed and Beverly Cross. Produced by Charles H. Schneer. Directed by Don Chaffee. On a clifftop overlooking the sea, a warrior in a Corinthian-style helmet stands guard holding a spear. A bearded man passes with a bucket of steaming black coals, which he sets down on a stand. An officer heads up the slope towards him from a military camp in a sandy bay below.
Well?
The grey-bearded man takes two fistfuls of burning coals into his palms before raising them to the heavens.
Zeus, king of the gods of the Greeks. Write in the ashes so that I may read the future.
He opens his hands.
I see a great tree at the end of the world. And in its branches there hang the skull and the skin of a ram. They gleam and shine, for it is a prize of the gods, a golden fleece.
We've no time for riddles and mysteries. Tell me of tonight.
The seer gives the officer a cursory glance.
Elias, you will conquer tonight. You will overthrow the kingdom of Thessaly. You will kill the king, Aristo, and wear his crown. You will do all these things without fear or wound because Zeus commands it.
If I am protected by Zeus, I will have no need of this. I will lay it on the fire as a thank offering to the gods.
Elias, it is also foretold that although you will win the throne of Aristo, you will, when Zeus ordains, lose it to one of Aristo's children.
Pelias snatches up his sword again.
Then Aristo will have no children.
He has three, Pelias. Two daughters, Philomela and Briseis, and a son, Jason.
Then two daughters and a son will die with their father tonight.
As a muscular man strikes a large gong, Pelias' armies storm an impressive stone temple and are met on the steps by guards armed with spears. In the ensuing battle, Pelias' archers unleash a volley of flaming arrows onto the buildings of Thessaly. Pelias and his elite soldiers flood into the city and clash with Thessalian forces. In a dark and smoky corridor, a frightened woman cradling a baby to her chest tries to flee past the towering stone pillars. Outside, Pelias scours the steps, then dashes off. The seer prevents his soldiers from following him. A Thessalian soldier emerges from a palatial building with a child in swaddling. The seer refuses to allow Pelias' soldiers to attack. Now, a beautiful dark-haired woman with long flowing robes sets a third baby down in the lap of a goddess's statue.
Hera, queen of gods, protect this child, my sister Philomela. And if I, Briseis, am worthy, take me into your protection.
Bryce steps back and kneels before Hera's monument. Pelias enters the chamber behind her while she prays, brandishing his sword. He scans the shadows on his way up to Bryce's. He has a tyrannical, wide-eyed look about him.
Are you Bryce, the daughter of Aristo?
Be silent. She is praying.
A silhouetted figure.
For her sister and for her murdered father, Aristo.
Are you a priestess?
I serve the gods.
Then tell me, has Bryce called upon the goddess Hera?
She has.
And has the goddess heard her prayer?
Yes.
Then pray for me.
He thrusts his sword into Bryce's back.
It is the will of Zeus.
It is not the will of Zeus. It is your will. Zeus has given you a kingdom. The rest will be your own doing.
Pelias looks at the child in the lap of Hera.
The gods abandon you, Pelias. A one-sandaled man shall come, and no god shall protect you from him.
A one-sandaled man?
The child who has escaped you, Jason.
Pelias looks alarmed.
Then why was I not told the whole prophecy? Why did Zeus drive me to kill this girl, when the only one I needed to kill was Jason?
Zeus cannot drive men to do what you have done. Men drive themselves to do such things, that the gods may know them, and that men may understand themselves. The killing of Jason would do you no good. Kill Jason. And you kill yourself?
While Pelias has his back turned, the black-clad figure vanishes into thin air at the base of Hera's statue. Amongst the clouds on Mount Olympus, Zeus gazes into a mystic pool while Hera materializes behind him.
Zeus, my godly husband, did you for some reason order the profanation of my temple in Thessaly?
That was entirely the fault of Pelias. Not content with winning the throne of Thessaly as I wished, he tried to avoid losing it as I've commanded.
Zeus waves his hand over the pool and Pelias' image fades.
I know that you've been insulted, my dear. But be content. The boy Jason has escaped. He will avenge you.
How?
You must know by now I never arrange exact and precise details.
And because you were neither exact nor precise, a young girl was killed and my temple was profaned. I want to help Jason.
No. You may help the infant Philomela if you wish. She's a girl. The rest is man's work.
No. I want to help Jason.
As you wish. How many times did Aristo's daughter Bryces call upon you? By name?
Five.
Well, then, you can help her brother five times. Five times only you can help him to overthrow Pelias. And that is my final word.
It will be 20 years before Jason becomes a man, or an instant of time here on Mount Olympus. But a long 20 years for King Pelias.
She conjures up an image in the pool.
He cautiously travels the roads of Thessaly. Yes, Pelias, you have had years of watching and waiting for the man who must come to kill you. The man with one sandal.
As a troubled Pelias rides on horseback along the water's edge, on the trail before him, the black-clad Hera suddenly appears. Pelias is thrown from his horse and lands in the water. He surfaces and meets Hera's smug smile. But as he swims to the shore, she vanishes into a cloud of smoke, leaving him bewildered. The smoke drifts into the water, and seconds later, Pelias struggles against something pulling at his feet. He's yanked into the depths, but not before a young dark-haired wanderer notices him from the far shore and rushes to his aid. While the stranger carries the fallen king to the shore, Hera's cloud-like form disperses. Left to rest on a rock, Pelias notices that his savior has lost a sandal during the rescue. He gazes up at the fresh-faced man.
I owe you
knife.
That was as good a way to ford a river as any, but I seem to have lost a sandal in doing it.
Where are you traveling?
To the palace of the king.
Pelias?
Pelias of Thessaly.
Then I can put you on your way. But first, you must accept the hospitality of my camp. Come.
The stranger smiles innocently and they leave together. Hera materializes amongst some nearby shrubs. Pelias leads the man through his camp, passing some beautiful women dancing in a clearing. Pelias stops under a canvas awning and gestures.
Be seated.
The stranger accepts his offer. Pelias sits beside him with the aging seer on the other side. They watch the sultry dance unfold before them. The dancers' flowing moves continue until Pelias brings the dance to an end.
You have not yet told me your name.
I am Jason, the lawful king of Thessaly. One of my father's soldiers rescued me and brought me up in exile. Now I've returned to claim my kingdom.
I have waited for you for 20 years.
And in that 20 years, Pelias has turned my kingdom from the pride of Greece to a savage, evil land. I shall need your help.
When your father defended his throne, no man fought harder than I.
This time it will not be enough to fight. I could fight. I could find Pelias and kill him. But the people need more than a leader. They must believe the gods have not deserted them. They need a miracle.
And where will you find this miracle?
I have heard there is a tree at the end of the world, with a fleece of gold hanging in its branches.
I have heard this too. So have many men. They say it is a gift of the gods.
It has the power to heal, bring peace, and rid the land of plague and famine. If I could find this prize and bring it home to Thessaly, then it would inspire the people. Wipe out the years of misrule. They would know that the gods have not abandoned them. My land would be rich and strong again, as it was before this tyrant Pelias murdered my father.
Jason, be advised by me. First, search for this golden fleece. Do not reveal yourself to Pelias. But build a ship and find a crew. And when you have this prize, then and only then, return and kill Pelias.
Jason meets Pelias' gaze, then stands up. They clasp each other's forearms.
And now rest yourself. My companions are yours to command.
A young man who's been observing nearby waits for Jason to leave.
Father, why do you let him live?
If I destroy him, Acastus, I destroy myself. While he is searching for the golden fleece, he is at the ends of the earth. And I am safe.
And if he finds it?
You will be there.
The seer looks on thoughtfully. That evening, Jason finds him plucking a lyre by a fallen statue.
Have you come to pray to the gods, Jason?
If I had, I wouldn't have chosen a fallen one.
Only a statue. Sometimes the gods argue amongst themselves. Then great winds blow and temples fall.
Hermes?
Yes?
No, I said the statue was the god Hermes. Hermes.
Ah, yes. A bringer of dreams and a prowler of the night. Jason!
Hermes wanders over to him.
No man can tell you how to find the fleece. Is it not time you ask the gods?
They will not answer those who believe in them. Why should they answer one who doesn't?
Come with me.
Why?
So that you will believe and be answered.
They step into the ruins of a temple, and Hermes gestures for Jason to stand on a stone tablet raised slightly off the ground. Jason does so under a brooding sky. Hermes steps aside and then meets Jason's questioning stare with a look of calm wisdom. The old man's form blurs and his youth returns along with his godly white robes, gold-winged helmet and serpent-like scepter. Jason looks on aghast as Hermes grows in size while an electrical blue cloud swirls at his feet. The god vanishes. Jason then notices flames licking at his own feet, but before he can act, he's completely engulfed in thick white smoke. He disappears and the smoke rises up towards the courtyard of the gods on Mount Olympus, where Hermes materializes. On a map of the world, Zeus moves two miniature figures from separate islands onto the mainland, close to a galley.
You win, my lord. That is, the battle, not the war.
Hera makes her move.
Oh, those waters are far too shallow for galleys. Hera, my dear, you really must learn to win without cheating, or at least to lose gracefully.
Hera wanders away from the gaming table. Hermes makes his way over.
Greetings, Hermes.
Greetings, my lord Zeus.
There seems to be a piece missing.
Perhaps I can help.
Hermes opens his hand, and Jason suddenly appears in his palm.
Welcome to Olympus, Jason.
Hermes smiles, then sets Jason down on the map.
Jason come to Mount Olympus at last. No man calls upon the gods unless he wants something. We arranged for you to be brought here by Hermes.
I wouldn't have believed a mortal could ask the help of the gods. Much less visit them.
Well, at least you're honest. Which is more than I can say for most other mortals. What is it you want? A ship? A crew?
No. Those I can find myself.
Oh, and what are you going to use in place of gold?
The hearts of men.
I am Hera, queen of the gods, and your protector on this voyage. But my lord Zeus has decreed a limit to the number of times I may help you when you call upon me. Do not speak now. I know what you must ask of me. Does the golden fleece exist? And if so, where is it?
That's two questions.
And I shall help him with only one answer. Search in the land of Colchis.
Then it does exist. But Colchis, that's the end of the world. No Greek has ever sailed there.
Now that you've heard that, are you so sure that you will not need my help? Think carefully. I offered him a ship and a crew, and he refused me.
Refused the help of the gods?
Zeus sits down on his throne, and the other gods gather round.
What ship is strong enough to reach to the edge of the world? What crew brave enough to sail in her?
I shall tell the shipbuilders of Greece that the richest cargo in the world waits in Colchis. The golden fleece is worth a kingdom, and I shall say that only the strongest ship ever built will survive the voyage. The athletes of Greece are proud. I'll tell them that only the best can expect a place in the most perilous voyage in history. I shall announce the games. Invite the strongest and bravest of the Greeks. No greater games shall ever be held, unless the gods decree otherwise.
I did well to choose you, Jason. The gods are best served by those who want their help least.
A thuggish brute goes out his opponent at the games.
Welcome, Polydeuces.
Of Sparta!
Another athlete raises his arms in triumph.
Castus of Thessaly!
Pelias' son uses a slingshot and Jason congratulates him.
Well done, Castus.
Valerius of Athens, champion and archer of Greece. Euphemus of Denarum, Spyrus of Syracuse.
The muscular and bearded Hercules leaps from his boat and playfully throws another athlete to the ground, whilst receiving rapturous applause.
I mean,
mean to sail with you, Jason. Tell me which champion you want me to beat.
No one. I know you can beat us all. Your place is reserved.
Hercules. Yes. Hercules?
Yes?
My name is Hylas. Like you, I came too late to compete in the games. But it occurs to me that if I can beat you at something, Jason couldn't refuse me a place in his ship either. After all, he might need brains as well as brawn. Shall we compete?
Hercules glances around, then selects the contest.
Discus?
While Hylas studies a discus, Hercules flips his in the air.
Come on.
They stroll down to the shore, and Jason looks on with a smile.
See that rock?
Yes.
No thrower has ever reached it.
And is the contest to hit it or pass it?
You'll be lucky if you get halfway. Now, come on.
Now, after you, Hercules. I've never thrown a discus before. I'd like to see how it's done.
Hercules draws his throwing arm back, then sets the discus soaring towards the rock. Having scored a direct hit, Hercules accepts Hylas's backpack from him and watches with the others. Hylas sends the discus skimming across the calm sea, and it hits the rock, and to everyone's surprise, continues on beyond it. Letting out a hearty laugh, Hercules lifts Hylas into the air. On Olympus, all the gods but Zeus are laughing.
Let Hylas have his moment of triumph, while he may.
You shall have your place, Hylas!
Hail, Hylas!
I have found the finest crew in all Greece. Now for a ship that is worthy of them.
Argus? Argus! Hello?
That you, Argus?
Who's there?
It's Jason. Come aboard!
Jason climbs aboard the sturdy vessel and notices an emblem in the center of the ship's deep red sails. It's a ram's head in the middle of a yellow sun. He goes over to meet the boat's builder, Argus, a stout, balding man with a graying beard.
Oh. So you've come back again.
She's a fine ship.
Yes. She is a fine ship. She's ready to sail.
We've yet to give her a name. I'll call her the Argo, after her builder.
Yeah. The Argo. Oh, well. You better have a look at the figurehead. It might make you change your mind.
No, this way.
Is it forward?
No, it's astern.
We'll have to move it. A figurehead is supposed to watch over the water ahead of the vessel.
I can't help that. Something made me put it here.
A beautiful blonde-haired goddess opens her eyes and overlooks the deck.
Hera, queen of the gods.
What?
Nothing.
You don't object to it here?
No.
Nor do I. Makes me feel someone friendly is watching over us. When do we sail?
Tomorrow.
Now, while a drummer beats out a rhythm for the oarsmen of the Argo to row to, Jason glances up at the Hera figurehead and she blinks again. He turns away and walks along the deck towards the bow of the ship. Helping some others to move provisions below deck, Argus exchanges a smile with Jason, while the wind makes the sail billow. Jason stops Hylas to take a swig from his water bag. The Argo's prow is designed like a face, with staring eyes and a nose which slices through the water. Jason and Argus look out at a golden sunset. Now Jason's staring at Hera's figurehead. As the sun dips below the horizon, the gods look on with intrigue from Mount Olympus.
Thank you.
In a vast expanse of open water, the Argonauts struggle to ruin the searing heat. Hylas pats their shoulders, urging them on. The drummer maintains a steady tempo. Argus looks at the dead calm sea and then shields his eyes as he glances up at the sun blazing in a cloudless sky. Jason stops Hylas giving water to an oarsman.
Don't waste it.
There isn't enough left to make any difference, Jason.
Oh, let him rest. But the sooner we find some island with water, the better. We can't row much longer on 3 sips a day.
Take my advice. Put back to Icos.
But we'd lose 5 days sailing.
We haven't water enough for tomorrow, let alone the time it would take us to reach Icos.
Don't worry, Hylas. I don't expect him to take my advice. But I wish he'd listen to someone.
Jason turns away despondently and walks over to Hera's figurehead. Argus is operating the rudder.
Still grumbling? Sailors always grumble.
These sailors have something to grumble about. Hardly any water. Blistered hands.
Well, they should use brine.
Brine?
It toughens the skin.
Well, go down and treat them. I'll steer.
Jason takes the helm from Argus and then turns back to the figurehead.
Hera?
Her eyes open.
You said you could help me a certain number of times. So far, you've told me of Colchis.
And I threw Belias from his horse and dragged him beneath the water.
Pelias. So that was King Pelias.
I know your need. Set sail and steer north. You will reach land at noon.
Where?
The Isle of Bronze.
I've never heard of it.
No mortal has. It was the foundry of the gods. Hephaestus labored there, making armor and weapons for Zeus. Oh, do not fear. Hephaestus himself has long departed. I will see that you reach the Isle of Bronze. But listen to me, Jason. Listen very carefully.
Handing out brine, Argus pauses when he sees Jason gazing up at the figurehead. Jason then turns to a shipmate.
Take the helm. Yes, sir. Set sail!
Several Argonauts set about releasing the ship's great sail.
We reach land at noon. Then you can fill your bellies until they grumble as much as your tongues. Now mark this. It will be safe to take food and water, but nothing else. Absolutely nothing else.
That doesn't include women.
If there are any on the island, yes, it does.
If I meet a girl with a firm leg, a full bosom and a warm heart, let no man try and stop me.
Talos will.
Who's Talos? You don't mean there's a man there who wants a fight?
I spoke of no man. Food and water, Hercules. That's all.
Jason, who told you of this island?
The goddess. Hera.
The Argo sails on through calm waters, silhouetted against a golden sunset. The next day, Argus is keeping watch from the crow's nest. A smile crosses his face and he lowers himself down a rope. They have reached land. The crew row with renewed vigor around a rocky cliff into a narrow channel.
Port helm! Steady as you go! Furl the sail!
The sail is raised. With a sandy bay in sight, they drop anchor. It's a large boulder with a rope secured tightly around it.
Ashore for food and water!
Armed with spears and bows, the Argonauts descend a ladder onto the shore. Hylas to Hercules and the others.
Are goats good sailors?
Goats? What are you talking about? Well, what do you want with goats on board ship?
Well, some of us might be hungry. Or thirsty.
Come on.
They sprint on, with Hercules wielding a large club above his head.
There's one for the plot.
Hercules trips and Hylas tumbles over him into the dirt while the goats flee.
Hercules!
The two men emerge through shrubs over the brow of a hill. At the head of a narrow valley beyond is a huge bronze statue mounted on a massive plinth. It's of a warrior brandishing his sword poised for battle.
Isn't he one of the Titans?
He might be. He's big enough.
Didn't Jason say something about Talos?
Several other sculptures have been erected behind it. Hylas and Hercules make their way over to Talos.
This must be where Hephaestus molded the statues of the gods.
Yes, and set them up for all the world to see.
They stand in awe under Talos's muscular form. Then Hylas notices a door slightly ajar on the side of the sculpture's plinth.
Hercules.
Dwarfed by the colossal bronze statue, Hylas leads the way towards the opening. Hercules looks around cautiously before joining Hylas by the door. Together, they manage to heave it open. As sunlight floods the chamber inside, it reveals a vast wealth of larger-than-life gold and jewels.
It's a treasure chamber.
The treasure chamber of the gods.
They set down their weapons and investigate.
Look at this.
And this? A pearl.
It's a javelin.
Don't be silly, in a jewel box. It's a brooch pin.
Well, whatever it is, it'll make a useful weapon. Let's get back to the ship.
Hercules.
Well, what is it?
You'd better put it back.
Why?
Remember what Jason said.
It won't be missed. Anyway, if the gods leave all this lying about unguarded, they obviously don't want it. Come on!
The door slams shut on them. They try to open it, but it won't budge. Hercules steps back, clasps his hands together, and blows on his leather wrist bracers. He then braces himself against the doorframe and puts his back into opening the enormous door. With great effort, he manages to push the door ajar and the two men hurry out. At the base of the statue, they brandish their spears, ready to deal with any danger. Carefully, they scan the area around them.
It must have been the wind.
High above them, the gigantic crouching warrior begins to move upon his pedestal. Talos's head turns, and he seems to see the two Argonauts, who immediately flee in terror.
Hercules found a woman after all.
Jason looks down the beach and sees his men running in fright from the gigantic Titan.
Jesus.
The moving statue stands a full 100 feet high as it steps onto the beach and walks menacingly towards the Argo. The sailors clamber aboard in panic and hastily make ready to depart. Ropes are cut, and the boarding ladder is left to splash into the water. The Argonauts begin frantically rowing, and the ship begins to pull slowly away from the shore. Back on the beach, three stragglers run for their lives as Talos kneels and attempts to crush them beneath his outstretched hand. On board the Argo, the rowers glance back as Talos steps to the shoreline and watches the stragglers swim out to the departing ship. The swimming men are helped aboard by their crewmates. The impassive face of the bronze colossus gazes down as the Argo heads out into deeper waters. Talos walks away from the shoreline. Straining with effort, the Argonauts row their ship towards the narrow mouth of an inlet and the open sea beyond. As they row, Talos appears striding deliberately along the rocky outcrop on one side of the narrow channel. Placing one huge foot at the end of the outcrop, the Titan swings the other across the water and anchors it on the opposite bank. It stands like the Colossus of Rhodes, towering over the ship's escape route. Sailors change position and desperately try to reverse the Argo's drift towards Talos. He shifts his sword from one hand to the other and bends over the ship that's so completely dwarfed beneath him. The Argonauts look up in fear. Their efforts have been too late, and the ship is now within reach of the monstrous statue. It bends down and slowly reaches for the bow with one hand. Grasping the Argo's curved prow, Talos lifts the ship clean out of the water. Sailors fall overboard as he shakes it like a toy. The figurehead of Hera at the stern breaks off, and the main mast crumbles. Then, Talos releases the Argo, and the damaged ship plunges back into the water. He surveys the sea beneath him, full of struggling sailors and debris, before walking off. Jason swims over to the floating figurehead.
Against the man of bronze, our weapons are useless. I repeat that question.
Then I must answer it. Fight Talos with your wits rather than your courage. And look to his ankles.
His ankles?
There is nothing else I can tell you.
The figurehead's eyes close again. Now, survivors from the Argo fight their way through crashing surf back onto the shore. Argus is knocked beneath the water by a breaking wave. Polydeuces helps him back onto his feet, and they stagger, exhausted, towards the sand. As the various crewmen collapse on the beach, Hercules and Hylas watch from a nearby ridge. They hurry down to join their shipmates. Carrying spears, some sailors rally round Jason behind a rock.
Jason! You disobeyed my order.
Another group of sailors are sprinting towards them, desperately fleeing from Talos. He appears behind a craggy cliff in the distance.
I shall do my very best to send him to you, Jason. My very best!
Valerius grabs his bow as Telu stomps forward and stares down at the sailors, scurrying like ants near his feet. Some of the men hurl rocks while Valerius fires arrows up at the moonfaced statue. Jason stands biding his time as Telu swings his sword down at the Argonauts. They move back out of the way, avoiding the slow swing of the blade quite easily. Other sailors run to escape being crushed beneath the statue's foot as he steps forward. One Argonaut hacks at Talos's toe with his sword, while Jason spots a strange circular door in the Titan's heel. Despite the display put on by the jeering Argonauts, Talos has become aware of the activity at his heel. He looks down as Jason returns to the ankle and continues to leave open the door. The door falls out completely, and a great torrent of hot liquid flows from the opening. Talos staggers slightly and drops his sword. The Argonauts rush back as the Titan grabs at his throat and teeters violently. Jason runs to safety. The sailors watch in awe as Talos clutches at his throat, the liquid pouring from his heel sending up a huge cloud of steam. Hylas runs back to fetch Hercules' spear. He grabs it, but looks up in horror as Talos falls forward and crashes down on top of him. The ship's a hive of painting, sawing, and hammering. A new beam is slotted together and fastened with a wooden pin. Polydeuces helps Argus and another crewman working beneath Hera before looking up at the busy decks. Polydeuces taps Argus's shoulder and Argus walks towards the bow. Sailors look up from their work with interest when they see Jason and Hercules climb aboard.
Well, we searched, Argus.
And I will search again.
Hylas was with us. We saw him running, but then he disappeared.
He could have been hurt, not able to get back to the ship. Like Palinurus, we had to carry him aboard.
Hercules, Hylas is dead. The gods decided it.
Why kill a boy for my grave fault? But I should have stayed with him.
Search until nightfall. We won't sail till then.
Sail when you please, Jason. I cannot leave this island till I've found Hylas.
Under the watchful eyes of the other men, Hercules steps down the Argo's gangway and wades through the shallow water onto the beach.
Jason, will you
abandon Hercules, the best man among us.
I, for one, won't sail without him. Nor shall I. No!
Come with me.
Jason leads the crew aft to the figurehead of Hera. He gazes at her for a moment, then turns to face his men.
Is there any man here who does not obey the gods? We will do as the goddess Hera commands, if she will speak to us.
The goddess's eyes open.
This is your last chance, Jason.
Some of the Argonauts sink to their knees.
The last time that I can help you.
I understand.
Then know this, Argonauts. Hylas is dead.
Hylas is dead.
As for Hercules, he is not fated to go further with the Argo. Zeus has other tasks for him.
And for us, Hera?
Sail to Phrygia. Seek out Phineas, the blinded man. Only he can guide you now.
Hera closes her eyes.
We set sail.
The sun is lying low in a dusky pink sky by the time the Argonauts are heaving the ship's oars through the water again. In silhouette, Jason stands at the bow, looking out at the open sea ahead.
Now I can really get fresh thanks to Steridon. Nah.
With Direct Line Car Insurance, vandalism cover that preserves your no-claims discount is now standard. We're only available direct. It pays to be with the right insurer. Direct Line.
Baby Mama is the freshest, funniest comedy of the year.
Is that chocolate or poop?
It's chocolate.
What if that had been poop?
Baby Mama.
Book at Expedia this July for thousands of great holiday deals, plus a chance to win free weekend stays with Marriott Hotels. Let yourself go.
That's her! Oi!
Get 0% on balance transfers for 14 months with Barclaycard Platinum.
Blue Dragon Sweet Chili Dipping Sauce. Eaten by you, made by me.
After 10 days inside, the experiment reaches its conclusion. But will the end of the inmates' first sentence be just the beginning of their story?
The things that I was doing were wrong. I don't ever want to come back here.
Banged Up concludes 9 o'clock Monday on 5.
Lights? These gleaming gnashes could light the whole film set.
At a ruined temple, two women leave food on a stone table, then hurry away. After they've gone, a blind man appears from behind a column and carefully feels his way forward with the aid of a stick. He makes his way to the stone tablet, where the women have left a loaf of bread and a plate piled high with fruit. The man pulls the loaf towards him and then starts to eat an apple. Nearby, a blue-winged creature lands on a stone plinth, and the blind man begins to hurriedly hide his food within his clothes. The terrifying creature, with the body of a bird but the head of a woman, hovers above the blind man, who cowers from it, clutching tightly onto his loaf. Suddenly, the beast sweeps in, knocking the man to the ground. As the man lashes out aimlessly with his stick, another identical beast appears, and the two creatures continue to harass him.
Help!
The man struggles to his feet and continues to try and defend himself with his stick. He stabs at one of the creatures, but it grabs his stick with its talons and flies away. The other beast swoops into the stone table and knocks it over, spilling the food onto the ground. Then one of the creatures pulls at the man's belt, making him roll across the ground. Man clambers up into the ruins in a desperate bid to get away. He tumbles over a wall and lands face down in a grassy courtyard. Outside the temple, the creatures feast on the food.
Lord Zeus, I was a sinner. I've never tried to deny it. But I didn't sin every day. Why then do you punish me every day?
The man sits up as he hears the Argonauts approaching. Seeing the bizarre blue creatures, Jason's men stop in their tracks.
What in the name of the gods are they?
Jason and a few of his men rush to the blind man's aid.
Are you Phineas?
Yes. Take my arm, I can't see yours. Don't flinch. Zeus gave me the gift of prophecy, but I misused it, so I was blinded. Zeus ordered the harpist to torment me. You, Jason, now listen to me. The gods have ordered me to tell you whatever you want to know. But the gods have gone too far with me. They can punish a man so much when then one day he abandons them. He says, all right, Zeus, throw a thunderbolt. Let the earth swallow me. I defy you. You growl away all you like, Zeus. I mean what I say. Jason. I'll tell you what you want to know, only if you'll meet my price.
What is your price, then?
Free me from these tormenting harpies.
If Zeus sent those creatures to plague him, we'd be unwise to interfere.
That's my price.
Then we'll meet it, Phineas. We'll make you the master of the harpies.
Phineas rests his head against Jason's chest. Now, as darkness falls, two of the Argonauts bring a plate of food to Phineas, who begins to eat. He flinches slightly as he hears the harpies approach. After they've landed, he begins to bring his walking stick out from under the stone table. The harpies crawl between the temple's pillars, then fly into the air. Phineas prepares himself, raising his stick and backing away from the table. The harpies swoop downwards and Phineas begins to swipe at them with his stick. Suddenly, the Argonauts appear from their hiding positions above the columns. They start to unravel a net, which is passed along the line of men, until it forms a makeshift roof over the ruined temple. More netting is lowered over the sides of the ruins, sealing the harpies inside. Argus climbs under the netting and goes to Phineas' aid. He takes a stick and leads him out, swatting at the harpies to keep them at bay. Two Argonauts charge forward, one carrying a spear, the other brandishing a sword. They're gradually joined by reinforcements, including Jason,
and together they battle with the winged beasts. As the harpies try to fly out of the ruins, they find their way blocked by the netting and a group of Argonauts who prod at them with spears. The harpies have to fly back towards the ground, where they find other Argonauts ready to attack them. In the fighting, one of Jason's men falls from a plinth.
Get to the rope!
The men standing on top of the columns take up position around the netting.
Down!
With their swords, they cut the ropes holding the net in place, allowing it to fall on top of the harpies. Caught up in the net, the harpies tumble to the ground. The Argonauts then pin the net down with their spears.
Chester, Valeris, find some wood to build a cage.
Later, a banquet is laid out in front of Phineas.
Here you are, you hungry fella. A baked fish for you and some more wine.
Well, Phineas, we've completed our part of the bargain.
What is it you want to know?
The way to Colchis.
The way to Colchis is through the Clashing Rocks. Steer northwest and you'll reach them in 5 days.
Northwest, eh?
After the Clashing Rocks, you turn northeast. Before long, you'll sight the shores of Colchis. But tell me, what gods protect you?
None now.
Then you won't pass the Clashing Rocks.
What are the Clashing Rocks?
They speak for themselves, don't they? All I can offer you is this. It's not much reward for what you've done, but it's all I have.
A clay figurine.
If that's all you can tell us, then, goodbye.
The gods be merciful to you.
Jason goes towards the harpies, now imprisoned in a wooden cage.
Phineas, from now on they'll witness a banquet every night and eat the scraps you leave.
Phineas tosses them a scrap.
Good appetite.
Phineas puts his hands over the spread of food in front of him and then claps with glee. Back on the Argo, Jason keeps an eye on his men as they row. They approach two huge cliffs of rock with a narrow channel running between them. Jason and Argus are looking over the ship's prow.
There's not much water here.
The Argo disappears into the narrow waterway between the two steep cliff sides. The men row wearily as they haul the boat through the strait.
Steady as you go. Row easy.
The Argo edges forward, and Jason stares up apprehensively at the cliffs.
Easy on.
Easy on!
The Argonauts stop rowing and look up towards the top of the cliffs. The men continue to scour the cliffs as the boat rocks from side to side. Jason stares along the eerily quiet channel.
It's a narrow channel, but I can't see what made Phineas so frightened. It looks calm enough.
Too calm.
Acastus!
Acastus moves forward to the bow.
I know the sea god's moods, but most of them are dangerous. Acastus, take a sounding.
The rest of you be prepared to row when I give the word. At an easy stroke, save your strength.
They may need it later.
The lookout points ahead.
Get behind!
she is. She doesn't seem to be in any great difficulty.
At the opposite end of the channel, a ship with blue and gold sails is edging towards them. Suddenly, rocks begin to fall from the cliffs on both sides of the Argo. As the rocks crash into the water, the ship starts to bob violently from side to side. The lookout loses his balance and tumbles out of the crow's nest into the sea. Jason's trying to grip onto anything he can as water splashes up over the prow. A huge chunk of the cliffside comes loose and crashes on top of the other ship. The Argonauts look up fearfully as more and more rocks start to crash around them. Of the cliffs begin to rock back and forth. Jason stares ahead in disbelief as the other ship begins to disappear under the surface. He steps forward and clutches onto the Argo's bow. The rockslide is abating. As the other ship sinks, great bubbles rise to the surface. The Argonauts look round nervously in the eerie silence that follows.
A whole ship's crew.
And Lynceus from the masthead.
There was no hope of saving him. Not in that sea.
Are we going through?
Yes.
But it... All right. We're going through.
Back to your places!
There's no turning back now.
No, Augustus. There's no turning back on this voyage.
Rubber! Beat out the stroke! But keep it easy!
The gods want their entertainment.
Jason goes too far.
Because he speaks the truth when the gods themselves go too far?
Zeus stares at the ship in the mystic pool. The crew of the Argo are rowing in time to the drummer's steady beat. Their apprehension is clear on their faces as they stare up at the imposing cliffs. Jason and Acastus are keeping a watchful lookout. Another massive rockslide begins. As the boulders crash into the water, the Argo is rocked from side to side.
Turn back, Jason! We're trapped!
Trapped, Kiara?
It seems so. You've left me only one move.
On the board game, he removes a clay statue towards the Argo. It's similar to the talisman that Phineas gave Jason.
Pray to the gods, Jason!
The gods of Greece are cruel. In time, all men shall learn to do without them.
Jason angrily throws the talisman into the sea, and where it lands, water starts to bubble up to the surface. Jason and Argus look on in terror. A colossal sea god appears from under the surface. Bare-chested and with a thick beard, he dwarfs the Argo and her crew. Rocks continue to crash into the sea as the giant lifts his scaled, fish-like tail out of the water. The sea god looks up at the swaying cliffs, and using his huge arms, he stretches across the divide, pressing his hands into the cliffs to keep them apart. Jason and Argus stare up as the ship bobs across the water towards the sea god. The Argonauts are flung about as they struggle to maintain a steady course. Acastus stumbles back into his seat while the Seagull continues to keep the cliffs apart. The exhausted men row the ship under the Sea God's arm.
Get your hands cracked and your legs bent!
At the prow, Jason and Argus watch as the mast begins to move clear of the Sea God's powerful arm. Water rushes over the side of the boat, soaking the oarsmen. The Argo steadily negotiates the choppy waters, moving underneath the Sea God's arm and arriving clear on the far side of the dangerous strait. Jason and Argus rush to the stern, and still holding apart the rocks, the Sea God turns to face them.
Keep the stern going!
Then, the Sea God sinks beneath the water with a final flick of his mighty tail fin. In their mystic pool, Zeus and Hera see the ship clear the channel.
Jason dared to speak of the end of the gods, and yet you let him live.
If I were to punish every blasphemy, I'd soon lose all loyalty and respect.
You are the god of many men. Yet when those men no longer believe in you, then you return to nothing.
You understand that, and yet you remain with me.
You think it weak of me, my lord?
Not weak. Almost human.
She smiles, then turns back to gaze into the pool. On the Argo, the exhausted oarsmen are taking a rest. Jason is standing with Argus.
Whichever god or goddess helped us is to be thanked. Those others weren't so fortunate.
Watch that.
Jason dives into the water and swims towards some flotsam that's drifting across the clear blue water. Acastus dives in moments later. Now about, the oarsmen are on their feet watching from the side of the boat. Jason swims over and rescues a beautiful woman with raven hair. Later on, Jason carries a golden goblet over to a makeshift shelter at the boat's stern. Resting in the shade on a bed of fur, the woman opens her eyes and turns her face to look at him.
Who are you?
Your ship was lost. We found only two other survivors. They're being looked after. Here, drink this. When did you sail from Colchis?
Dawn this morning.
Dawn? Then our journey is nearly over.
Where have you come from?
Thessaly.
But that's the other side of the world. You don't look like a merchant. Your vessel's a fighting ship.
We'd be foolish to sail unarmed. By all accounts, your king, Aetes, fears the gods. And we were sent by the gods. But I'm going to talk to him alone, peacefully. Now you answer a question. What was your ship doing in such dangerous waters?
We came to sacrifice to the gods of the rocks. To throw flowers onto the sea to make it safe for our ships. I'm afraid our gods were angry, not so powerful as yours.
Are you a priestess?
I serve in the temple of Hecate.
A dancer? Is Hecate the god of the Colchians?
The goddess.
But I'd heard they worship some strange idol. The skull and skin of a ram.
No ordinary ram. Its fleece is of gold. A gift of the gods themselves, and it's brought our city great peace and prosperity.
We'll put you ashore at dawn tomorrow. Perhaps you will show me the way to the city. Now, tell me your name.
Medea. And you can answer my first question. Who are you?
My name is Jason.
Now the golden sun hangs low on the horizon as the oars gently dip in and out of the water.
Within a few hours, we shall sight Colchis. I'm coming in quietly by night. Now the voyage is over, I don't want the trouble to begin.
Won't be any trouble, Jason. Just tell us where the city is and when we attack.
We don't attack.
But that's foolish. You have the finest fighting men in the world.
40 fighting men against a nation.
Better 40 than one, Jason.
We're not pirates, Valerius.
What's that girl done to you? We thought you were a fighting man.
I'm going up alone in the morning to see what the situation is.
Oh, you mean spy out the land? Well, why alone? Why not take a few of us scouting?
The fewer who go, the less can get caught. Now, what's the fewest you can think of?
One, of course.
Right. I accept your advice.
But I don't. Having sailed this far together, I suppose we're free to speak our minds.
And what's on yours, Acastus?
We nose our way upstream, rush the guards and seize the fleece. We'd be out into the open sea while Aetes and his Colchins were still asleep.
A night attack?
Yes.
And in the dark, during the attack, a man will die. That man will be me. A javelin in my back. A Greek javelin, Acastus. Maybe your javelin.
You'll die for that, Jason.
Keep back.
Acastus grabs a sword and the pair begin exchanging blows. Medea comes out and looks on with concern. With gritted teeth, Jason pushes Acastus off, then swings his sword, but it hits the mast instead. Acastus swings at him on a rope, but falls between the benches. But before Jason can go for the kill, Acastus kicks him backwards. Acastus knocks the sword from Jason's hand, but Jason buys time with a blow to the face. On the floor of the boat, Acastus finds a barbed harpoon. With a look of steely determination, he charges at Jason, who tries to fend him off with a piece of netting. Acastus slices Jason's arm, but in an agile about turn, Jason pins the harpoon to the deck, picks it up, and aims it at his opponent. Acastus turns and leaps overboard, and Jason throws the harpoon at him. Euphemus dives into the water and searches the murky blue depths. He finds Acastus, and the two men wrestle violently. The Argo is silhouetted against the setting sun. Later, a body is brought on board.
It's Euphemus. He's dead. Look at this. Slashed and bloody. Acastus must be at the bottom of the sea.
I wonder. Make sail!
And Euphemus?
The sea was his kingdom while he was alive. Let it take his body, now he's dead.
Make sail! Make sail!
Medea comes over to Jason.
You're wounded. We have a flower in Colchis which heals and soothes. Tomorrow I'll show you.
He smiles, then leaves her watching him with an intrigued expression. The next day on land, she treats his arm with the flower.
What do you call the flower?
It has no name. It grows on a double stalk. They say it sprang from the blood of Prometheus, and it has been used over the years for its soothing and curing powers.
His scar vanishes.
The sun's getting higher. We must be on our way.
Follow the road to the east.
You're not coming further?
I go another way.
In the opulent temple of Hecate, Medea's performing a sensuous dance. Wearing a tight shimmering dress split to the thigh and a golden tiara, she swings her arms and hips in time to the music. Jason is watching her, entranced. Other dancers surround her and extend their arms in a star-shaped pose. Their diaphanous skirts swish as they leap and prance. Medea is lifted up by the legs, and she arches backwards so she's facing the audience. Her skin glistens with golden paint. She's gently lowered to the ground. In a formation with her at the center, the other dancers twirl and kick out their legs. Medea Medea opens her eyes before a golden statue of Hecate, which dominates the temple's altar. With her eyes closed and as if in a trance, she raises her arms in front of the ancient goddess. Then she's lowered backwards onto the bodies of the other dancers, who turn her to face the audience, then place her back on her feet. Medea lowers her arms, and the other dancers slip a dark red priestess's cloak encrusted with jewels over her shoulders. Medea opens her eyes, then takes small, deliberate steps forward. The other dancers disperse, joining the onlookers standing by the pillars lining the temple. Beneath eyelids shimmering with purple glitter, Medea looks to the entrance. The crowd parts, and King Aetes enters, flanked by slaves. Together with his entourage, he makes his way to the steps where Medea is standing. A throne is brought forth, and the king sits down with Medea at his side.
The goddess Hecate has spoken. There will be one among us today from the ends of the world. His name is Jason. Any man of whom he asks his way shall say this: Aetes, king of Colchis, awaits him in the temple of Hecate. And that is all any man shall say to him.
Jason makes himself known.
Come forward, Jason.
He moves closer. He stops in front of Medea.
You have done all of us a great service. Tonight we shall feast you. We know of your great heroism and it deserves celebration. Return then to your companions and bring them to my palace.
I thank you, my lord. But I do not understand.
The king sees him look to Medea.
Medea?
Welcome to Colchis.
Now, in a palatial courtyard, a sumptuous banquet is taking place. Servants move between Jason and the Argonauts, who are seated beside the king. Aetes raises his hand and then his goblet.
I give you Jason and the Argonauts!
Jason and the Argonauts!
The king takes a seat next to Jason.
Tell me, Jason, why did you come to Colchis?
In peace.
I said why, not how. Altogether, how many men of you?
Enough.
And you say you do not threaten us. The envoys who come to me in deceit remain in death.
I know you've come for the fleece. And I know, too, that if you cannot win it by bargaining, then you plan to steal it.
But we'll never part with it, Jason.
It is a gift of the gods. It has brought wealth and peace to Colchis. And should we ever let it go, it would mean plague and famine and the destruction of our country. We can no longer welcome or entertain you, but treat you as you deserve, as thieves, as pirates, as murderers.
Jason reaches for his sword, but he's surrounded.
We give our thanks to one person. A person who exposed a criminal attempt on our kingdom. The son of King Pelias of Thessaly. Acastus!
Acastus comes forth and places his hand over his heart. As Acastus bows before the king, Jason glares at him before he and the rest of the Argonauts are pushed out by guards. Acastus smiles smugly, while Medea watches with concern. That night, in the temple of Hecate, Medea goes to her goddess.
Queen of Darkness, you've always helped me. Tell me now what I must do. You who gave me the gift of foresight, why didn't you reveal to me Acastus's treachery? He who sits drinking with Aeetes, while Jason, in prison, condemned to death. If I help him now in the quest for the fleece, I shall be a traitor to my country and to you, Hecate. And if not, to myself. Help me.
Later, wearing a hooded cloak, Medea steals a ring of keys from a sleeping prison guard. As she bends down to put a key in a lock, the guard stirs in his sleep. Jason hears the key rattle, and as the door opens, he arms himself with a flaming torch.
Medea, why did you come here? Was it Aeetes who sent you?
I came to ask you to give up your quest and sail away with the Argonauts in peace. Never return.
Never to think again of the Golden Fleece?
Never to think of the Fleece.
Then it was Aeetes. You tell him I will fulfill the task the gods have set me and never betray the Argonauts, whatever he offers me. Even if it's Medea, High Priestess of Akati.
Please. Forget the Golden Fleece. I fear for your safety. If you're set on carrying it away, I must come with you.
I'll go alone.
No. I have to go with you. I have no country now. And I love you.
She ushers him to the door. Jason steps outside, and after checking the coasts clear, they slip away. The Argonauts, meanwhile, are in another cell.
Shh! Castor, Valeris, Demetrius, get to the door. The rest of you back to your places.
The men hurry into position, then the door opens.
The priestess!
Argus, listen to Medea.
When you're clear of the palace, go back to the ship and row downstream. There's a break in the cliff and a path leading through the woods. Anchor there. We'll join you.
The Argonauts hurry out, with Medea leading the way, tiptoeing past the sleeping guards. A soldier hurries up to Aeetes, who's sitting surrounded by comatose revelers.
Well, what is it?
Jason has escaped!
And his men?
They were all gone. I was making my rounds and found the guards drugged.
Drugged? Then there's an accomplice. Where's Acastus?
He's not in his quarters.
Acastus? Oh, Jason. But there's no reason to it. Unless it was Medea who mixed the drug.
The High Priestess of Akate?
I saw how Medea looked at Jason. If Medea is helping them, and she's guiding them to the Golden Fleece, and the Argonauts will take ship. The landward way is shorter. Muster your men, Captain!
The soldiers rouse themselves into action. Armed with a sword, a figure is creeping through the dark, misty woods. It's Acastus. He steps to the edge of a clearing where he sees the glistening Golden Fleece hanging over a bough. His face lights up. Now the Argonauts are back on their ship when something makes Argus prick up his ears.
Shh! Listen! Soldiers! Valeris, Castor, you come with me.
No, not you, Polydeuces.
But others! You stay aboard with the rest of the men and guard the ship.
Back on land, Jason runs up to the clearing and sees the Golden Fleece. With an excited smile, he moves tentatively towards it. the fleece hangs from the bough of a leafless tree whose gnarled exposed roots are surrounded by an eerie mist. After glancing around him, Jason reaches for the fleece. He turns to see a huge seven-headed serpent, the Hydra, in the mouth of a nearby cave. He makes ready to confront it, sword and shield at the ready, as the vile creature slithers towards him. As the Hydra emerges from the shadows, Jason sees the squirming form of Acastus coiled helplessly in its tail. Medea arrives in time to see the Hydra drop Acastus to the ground and then continue its advance towards Jason. Jason backs away slowly. The horned heads, each on the end of a long snaking neck, wriggle and writhe as the beast closes in. Medea watches breathlessly as the Hydra rears up before Jason and he swings his sword at its dragon-like heads. Lunging and snapping, the creature attacks Jason, who stands his ground, fending it off with both blade and shield. He runs up to higher ground, and the Hydra follows, each of its heads snaking at him in a hideous onslaught of biting. Jason changes position again, leaping on top of the rocks near the gnarled tree. Medea gasps as he fights off the Hydra with desperate swings of his sword before jumping to the ground on the other side. The golden fleece is tantalizingly close and he attempts to grab it. After wrapping its tail around Jason, the Hydra lifts him into the air and begins crushing him in its powerful coils. He hacks at the tail, trying to free himself, and slowly the serpent drops him to the ground. Medea looks relieved as Jason rolls free and raises his sword against the attacking heads. With the Hydra distracted, she runs to the tree. Jason finds his feet again and, steeling himself, lunges forward and stabs the Hydra's belly. With a second lunge, he buries the blade in the ferocious creature. Jason runs to safety and watches the Hydra's agonized contortions as it thrashes and twists before falling to the ground. Its death throes a monstrous display of serpentine twisting. Finally, with a last shake of its tail, the creature lies dead. Jason and Medea both stare at its motionless body. Then Jason, seeing Medea, runs to her. Nearby, Acastus breathes his last. Jason and Medea hurry over to his body and kneel beside it. Through the trees, Argus and two other Argonauts come running. Jason goes up to the fleece. Soldiers approaching.
Get the fleece.
The Argonauts stare in wonder at the glittering golden fleece. Argus goes up to it, but as soon as he lays his hands upon it, its luster fades and it becomes a dull earthy colour. The others help Argus to lift the fleece from the tree, while Jason sheaths his sword by Acastus's body. He rejoins the others, just as King Aetes nears the tree line with his soldiers. Jason glances back nervously as he and his friends make their escape in the opposite direction. The king arrives to find the Hydra dead and the fleece gone. He ventures forward to examine the scene, followed by his men. One of them spots Jason and his friends climbing up a cliff path.
Up there and that way.
The guards give chase.
Wait!
Aeetes fixes the fleeing Argonauts with an icy glare before approaching the dead Hydra.
Hecate, Queen of Darkness, revenge yourself against the Thessalians. Deliver to me the children of the Hydra's teeth. The children of the night!
In the darkening sky above, stabs of lightning give way to fireballs that hurtle downwards and explode upon the Hydra's body. Aeetes looks on as it begins to burn with a fierce intensity. His men shield their eyes from the blazing inferno as it completely consumes the beast. The fire burns and begins to die. As the last flickering flames gradually disappear, the skeletal bones of the creature are laid bare.
The teeth! Fetch me the Hydra's teeth! Quickly!
Under the king's intense gaze, his men set to work on the skulls of the Hydra, bashing and prying the teeth out with their swords. One soldier collects the teeth in his helmet. Finally, it's presented to the king, who grasps the teeth in his hand.
Against the children of the Hydra's teeth, there is no protection.
He sets off in pursuit of Jason, and the soldiers follow. Soon, they're hurriedly climbing the cliff face, closing the gap between them and the Argonauts. Distance above them, Medea reaches the top of the cliff. Behind her is Argus, who carries the fleece, followed by Jason and then the other Argonauts. As they run across the top of the cliff, an archer fires an arrow, hitting Medea in the back. Jason pulls the arrow from her and lays her on the ground. A shocked Argus looks on.
The fleece! Give me the fleece! It has the power to heal.
Jason places the fleece over Medea's motionless body, and he and Argus watch her intently. Meanwhile, the other Argonauts are fighting off the advancing soldiers. Jason and Argus watch with amazement as the fleece cloaks Medea's body in a bright golden glow. She stirs beneath it.
It's true. It does have the power to heal.
Jason smiles as Medea opens her eyes and smiles back at him. As she does so, the fleece loses its golden aura once again. The men help her to her feet. Aeetes and his soldiers reach the edge of the cliff.
Jason! Pull the guards back, Captain, or they may die, killed with Jason and his pirates.
Jason and his friends watch as Aeetes walks forward alone, clasping the helmet full of the Hydra's teeth. He stops and reaches into the helmet, removing a handful of the teeth. He holds them out in front of him.
Rise up, you dead, slain of the Hydra. Rise from your graves and avenge us. Those who steal the golden fleece must die.
Like a farmer sowing seeds, Aeetes moves backwards, throwing the teeth about him as he goes, sprinkling them far and wide. The Argonauts look mystified as the king throws out the last of the teeth, then returns to his men. Aeetes holds up a hand, warning his men to go no closer.
Argus, get down to the ship. Take Medea.
Come with me.
Argus and Medea leave, passing the high walls of crumbling ruined buildings. Jason and his men throw aside their leather shoulder straps and ready their weapons. Aeetes points to the ground. Rising up through the hard, dry earth is a living skeleton. Jason watches horrified as another skeleton appears. Two more emerge from the ground, each grasping a sword, shield, or a spear in its bony hands. Jason and his men watch as yet more skeletons rise above the soil to stand to attention like undead sentries. Aeetes skirts around to inspect his skeleton army before pointing a finger at the Argonauts. Riding in unison. Jason and his men back away towards the ruins. They retreat past the tall pillars of a temple. Aeetes watches intently as the skeletons close in, surveying the scene with a bloodthirsty eye. Cautiously as they step towards the Argonauts. But then, in a sudden burst of fury and speed, they run at them with their weapons held high. The three men leap onto a low wall and the fight begins. The skeletons rush to the base and slash at the Argonauts with their swords. The men parry the blows with skill, but the onslaught is too much. They retreat, jumping to the other side of the wall, with the skeletons in pursuit. One Argonaut stops to engage a skeleton in a one-to-one clash. Having kicked an attacking skeleton to the ground, he fights another. Jason has his own battle to contend with, knocking a skeleton from the base of a pillar. After a fierce struggle, one of the Argonauts hurls another skeletal foe over his head with a well-placed foot. He then jumps over the wall, ready to take on another. They lock blades, and he stares into the face of the grinning skull. His comrade uses his shield to an attacker, but sends the skeleton to the ground with a savage blow before escaping over a stone wall. Then, leaping onto the wall, he confronts his pursuer. After gaining the upper hand, he runs along the wall and bounds across a gap, evading the slash from the skeleton below. Several skeletons clamber up after him, and he finally succumbs to one of their blades. Clutching his belly, he tumbles to the ground. Jason is displaying expert but desperate swordplay as he battles skeleton after skeleton, decapitating one. As his companion fights nearby, Jason buries his blade into the ribs of another attacker. He throws aside yet another before running for the edge of the cliff. He stops to defend himself from the next wave of skeletons with blows from his shield. As Jason disarms a spear-wielding skeleton, his companion, set upon by two of the skeletal swordsmen, dies from a strike to his belly. His heroes immediately run towards where Jason is making a last stand near the cliff's edge. Seeing three more skeleton reinforcements approaching, Jason runs straight for the precipice, halts to throw a spear at his pursuers, then leaps off. Jason splashes into the sea next to the tumbling bones of his pursuers. Argus and the rest of the Argonauts stand watching as he swims towards the ship. On Mount Olympus, Hera is watching too.
I think that proves at last that I'm a worthy opponent, my lord.
Where are you going?
To clear the board. The game is over.
It certainly is not.
Hera looks thoughtful before casting a hand over the mystic pool to see Jason and Medea kissing.
For the moment, let them enjoy a calm sea, a fresh breeze and each other. The girl is pretty and I was always sentimental. But for Jason, there are other adventures. I have not yet finished with Jason. Let us continue the game another day.
In the pool, Jason and Medea kiss once again. The end, a Charles H. Schneer production.